In the lives of Native Americans, we all have one thing in common: bloodlines. The bloodlines are what connect our past to our future. In this podcast, we talk with Indigenous women who are impacting their world for the better, in big ways and small ways, while never forgetting to go back to their roots. Join Jeannie Burgess, member of the Peoria Tribe of Oklahoma, as she has conversations with powerful Native American women who are making a difference in their neighborhood, communities, and their world. Please subscribe and share and review our podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, welcome to Bloodlines. Today, I'm very excited to welcome my guest, Jessica Mullen. Jessica is from the Modoc tribe, and I'm going to let her tell you about her. Well, tell us a little about yourself, Jessica.
Hi, my name is Jessica Mullen. I am a Modoc Nation citizen. I'm 34. I'm a mother. I am the director of behavioral health for the Modoc Nation, and I live in Miami, Oklahoma.
So your Modoc roots go, I know that I'm on the enrollment committee at my tribe, the Peoria Tribe of Oklahoma, and I trace bloodlines. That's why the name of the podcast is Bloodlines. Can you talk a little bit about your bloodline?
Yeah, so our tribe was removed from the Pacific Northwest. So it's a region that's on the border of California and Oregon. In 1873 is when the Modoc War happened. And when that happened, we had around, it's documented around 55 warriors versus around 1,000 soldiers of the U.S. And through that process, we ended up surrendering and being relocated to the Quapaw Reservation, and then later to the very northeast corner of Oklahoma and what's considered Wyandotte, Oklahoma. It's a very small territory. In fact, I think it's the smallest territory in Oklahoma. We are the only tribe that was relocated to Indian Territory in Oklahoma from the Pacific Northwest. So very isolated from our traditional culture and territory and other tribes that would have been familiar to us. My base royal ancestor's name is Sam Ball. He was an elder and fought in the war and traveled here by cattle car.
So Jessica, growing up, I know that I grew up with my family, and they talked a lot about being a Peoria, what it meant. Is that what happened with your family?
You know, I wish I could say that culture was more embedded into just our everyday traditions, but it wasn't talked about as much as now reflecting back. I would have liked to have it be a part of my life. So I'm trying to make that a part of my daughter's life. We would go, I'm also Ottawa and Quapaw. So we would go to Ottawa and Quapaw powwows growing up. We were involved with that. And then there was kind of a certain point where that just sort of stopped or kind of fizzled out. And I think a lot of that had to do with just discord and family and just people going their own ways. The tight-knitness of our family started to separate. And so they weren't involved with those gatherings. And then as I grew older, wanting to be more connected, especially in my 20s and when I went to graduate school, Modoc Nation actually paid for my scholarship. But when I was in my grad program is when I really started thinking about culture and what it meant to be Modoc and how disconnected I felt from that. And I also realized that meant I was disconnected spiritually as well. Mm-hmm. Those were like pieces of me that felt like they were
right.
Missing.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there wasn't enough of that. I think that's also what drives me with the type of work that I'm doing now, of seeing how tradition and culture really is healing to people.
Yeah, you know, it actually is the biggest thing that I've heard so far in the recording of the podcast has been people saying we haven't been as aware of it as we've needed to be, and we're trying to make changes to become even more aware of everything. You know, I know in the case of the Peorias, they're starting a language class in August, mm-hmm. a Peoria language class. And, you know, my mother would be so proud of that. She's been gone 11 years, but my mother would be so proud of that. She was so involved in the culture of the tribe. And so I did get that big dose of, being a proud Peoria. So, Jessica, I feel like in my life that I feel more and more kind of driven and inspired by what my ancestors went through and what they did. Are you feeling that same thing in your life?
Absolutely. I think there's just like this warrior spirit inside of me. And I tell that to other like Modoc children and other Modocs that I talk to, like, if you have that part of you that just like, you see something that you don't agree with, and it's just kind of like this fire that ignites that makes you think like, I should do something about that. Like that passion behind taking care of people and your world is very important. I can remember I had went to it was like all tribes powwow, went to University of Denver for my graduate program. And there were lots of drumming groups, and it was inside a gymnasium, so it was very loud. but I hadn't been to a powwow since I was probably like 8. And so when I went in there in my mid-20s, I went by myself, and I started like becoming emotional, and that's not normally me. Yeah. I don't like to show my raw emotions out in public or really in front of people most of the time. And so I was in there, and I was like, why do I feel like crying right now? Why do I feel like so like moved, like something's disconnected? And this is like a signal of like, pay attention to what is coming up for you. So I kind of left there and had a little cry, but that's when I kind of just started to like, feel like there's something here that is missing that I need to attend to. And then I think looking back on just growing up and how I connected with animals and with nature, mm-hmm. and some of those signals that I would pick out from like even now I see cranes often. I feel like that's my spirit animal because mm-hmm. I see them so frequently, and I just kind of take those of signs of reassurance that I'm on the right path.
You mentioned passion. It was interesting. You mentioned passion at the very first of that answer to the question. Talk about passion, the Healing House. Let's talk about the Healing House and what it is, how it came to be. I've been doing a lot of research on the Healing House, and actually I see the Healing House van over here in Welch, which is very cool. I think it's the most amazing thing that you're doing. And did it come out of your background as a counselor? How did that all get started? Because you're a licensed therapist, correct?
Yes. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. So I'll just kind of back it up because it's been quite a journey. And I do feel like all of my experiences have led me to this point, even though they're very vast and different. I started actually going to school to be an accountant, which I found to be very boring, and I didn't like it. But in my mind, I was like, I want to do something so I can make money. That was like what I had in my head. But I didn't have a lot of money growing up. So that's what I thought, like, to be successful, you have to have money. And so that's what I was like, I want to be an accountant. And then I discovered that was not for me. And then I kind of actually started to go on this path that wasn't very good. Like it was got pretty dark and pretty scary, and I just had no direction or purpose. And then I had to call on my dad to rescue me and bail me out of my situation and kind of get back on my feet. Mm-hmm. But in the process of moving back in with a parent in my 20s was I went and worked at a residential mental health facility overnights. And that's when I started to discover like, we're not doing enough to help children in these settings. Like mm-hmm. the quality of care is not there. we can be doing better here. And so that was like when I started to like find my passion and my motivation to go back to school and have that drive to complete school and do it well too. I actually had really good grades for the first time. And so that kind of also like reassured me that sure. like, this is the right path. And so, like I mentioned before, Modoc Nation had has a scholarship. And so they paid for a majority of my education. And so once I graduated from University of Denver, I worked there for a little while, but I was really interested in animal social work. So I did some volunteer work at some different equine therapy programs and started to learn more about that and the healing benefits of working with animals, which I already knew because I've always had dogs and horses. So I've always found them to be very comforting. And so once I moved back to Miami, I actually started a private practice where I was contracting with the tribe some, just on the very small capacity. Maybe I could serve like 45 clients a year in doing that. And then I was encouraged to write a grant, which I was like, I don't know anything about grants or anything. So I had wrote a grant through the Department of Justice around serving victims of the opioid epidemic. Mm-hmm. And so it was a $750,000 grant for 3 years. And that's what kicked Healing House off. It was actually just funded me as a therapist and a case manager. So it started out with just me and one support staff. And then from there, we continue to write additional grant projects. Right now, we actually have a total of 6 grant projects through our Healing House, but we have 22 staff now in 2 locations. We have a counselor embedded at one of our local rural schools. So it's just really cool to see how things have. We're offering outpatient counseling services. We've just opened up the door to also serve adults within that program. So we're seeing 5 up across the lifeline. So it's really amazing just to see how fast things have grown. I think this last year we've served close to 220 individuals and their families in the Ottawa County area.
So talk about the name, the Healing House. Like, did that just come to you? Did you... Because I really love the name of it, and I love the idea of healing. As in the spirit of a full disclaimer, I've benefited from therapy greatly. I've had healing through therapy. So when you have healing in the title, I really love that. Was that your idea?
So we had met with we actually have a Modoc marketing, which are a Modoc member who runs that, Mona Craven. And so we were talking about it, like, what could our name be? And we were in a rent house that, so like when we got this grant through the Department of Justice, they were like, where do we put you? And they gave me a couple options. And I was like, I'll take the rent house over by the casino.
Right.
And so we were in a 4-bedroom rental home for the tribe that we turned into the Healing House. So Mona and I were talking about like, what do we call this? What do we call this? She's like, you could call it the Healing House. And I love that because we were in the house. That's what our focus is. I loved the house setting, even though we've outgrown that, we're onto another facility now, but it just made people feel so comfortable. And that's like the whole, motivation is that people feel comfortable when they're receiving counseling services, like that it's something that feels natural and that, a very, I guess healthy relationship can evolve that doesn't feel like so like professional and client, you know. It's like the relationship is the healing agent and all of that.
And it affects generations. Let's just be honest. It affects where they are right now, but it also affects future generations. And so, you know, as far as the clients that you see and so much that goes on in the day-to-day, is there anything that you do through the Healing House where you can bring in Native American thoughts, history, encouragement?
Yeah. So like right now, what we're doing is we have our equine therapy program. So that in itself is, you know, you're integrating nature and animals. It's on a 60 acre property in Fairland, Oklahoma, and it is beautiful out there. There's a Hudson Creek that runs right through it. There's fish in there. We take the kids down there to go fishing. We have a garden that they help with. So, those are just some natural like features of the environment that exist there that we make some connections around the land and whose land was this before, and honoring that. We also will do talking circle. We will smudge. We're looking at right now starting to integrate some natural healers into our group therapy process. Talking with some ladies out from California who are Modoc basket weavers who could maybe help us start to integrate some of that into our work. But we're always looking at how do we do that. One of our struggles is within our tribe, because we were removed here to Oklahoma. We have lost so much of our culture and our tradition. And up until like, you know, 4 years ago, we didn't have any type of gathering outside of our annual meeting. And now we have a family gathering, we have a youth camp, you know, we're starting to do more for our tribal members to build that culture. So we're really having to rely on other tribes in the area and their natural healers and starting to bring them into the picture of what we're doing.
Yeah, it's always nice that our general council, which a general council is the big kind of yearly meeting, for, you know, for those of you who don't know, to have the history and the culture brought in. They have some people that have been going through tribal lands to find some things. You know, when you talk about being removed, you've mentioned being removed a couple of times. I know what that means, but why don't you talk a little bit to the audience about what it means when you say being removed?
So I mentioned before about the Modoc War, and part of the causes that led to that were the idea that Modocs had murdered white people unjustly, and that was just not the case. And so that led to the Modoc War happening. When that happened, our leaders were executed in front of all of their tribal members. Modocs were rounded up and separated. So there was a group of Modocs that stayed behind on the Klamath Reservation, which is in California, and then another group that was loaded up onto cattle cars. And some of those people may not have even been Modoc. They just might have grabbed them and thrown them in there. So families are already being separated, and that process, plus the trauma of seeing your leaders executed. And yeah, there's more terrible stuff around that, but I won't go into that. And then being taken by a cattle car on such a long journey through the winter time, children and elders, and then coming to the Quapaw Reservation in such an unknown area. I understand why our culture has had such a stagnant period, because when they came here, because that war was so highly publicized, it was not okay to be Modoc. You absolutely did not want to be Modoc. You didn't want anyone to know that you were Modoc. Mm-hmm. You were already looked at as a bad person if you were that. So people were not talking the language. They were not sharing their history. You know, they were trying to keep it as quiet as possible, mm-hmm. that is who they were. And that's part of the generational trauma that we see now, is people are so disconnected from their identity because of these events, and they don't understand why.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when I talk to people about this and about, you know, what is, because I remember my grandmother and my mother were very proud to be Native Americans, very proud to be Peorias. And there was a lot of conversations about that. Like they were really strong women, really strong women. And I would think that so many Native American women are strong. Wouldn't you agree?
I would absolutely agree. I like to think I might be one of those women. You know, I feel like as women, we have to stand up for what we feel is right. We have to be direct with our messages and make sure people hear our voices, because they are important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They are very important. And I think that that's one reason why my passion was to start this podcast, because I want to point there's so many Native American women that are doing amazing things inside of their communities, outside of their communities, like you with the Healing House. So what are your big dreams? Sounds like the Healing House has been like, I mean, you have a lot of things going on, but do you have a big dream that you would like that hasn't hit yet?
Well, I mean, I have some pretty big goals for our property that we purchased in Fairland. You know, right now there's a ranch house that we're adding on to so that we can accommodate. We've had a waiting list for quite some time, so being able to add additional counselors, but I'd love to have some residential facilities that we can help mothers and children in recovery. I'd like to have some transitional housing that's why you actually have seen us in Welch, is we go over to the Welch Skills Center, which are where the adjudicated teen boys live. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like their last step. And what happens is we've seen great progress with those boys in our equine therapy program. And so, and it's great because they go back home and their behavior is tracked all the time. So we can really mark those improvements in what they're doing. But what's happening is they have the skills now to be leaving that program and they're going back to their old situation, which is usually like gang involvement or lack of family support. They don't have the supports they need to go be young, independent adults that contribute to society. Right. So I would also love to have a transitional living program to take those boys as they graduate out of that program and help them get integrated into the community.
Yes.
But I think there's so many people that they have so much potential, but they don't know how to unlock that purpose and that sense of drive to obtain their own goals.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you like for people to know about what it feels like to be a Native American Indigenous woman? And what do you want to pass down to your children?
Being a Native American woman today has its challenges. I think one for me is that I am white passing, and so I have to kind of give an explanation of my heritage and my involvement with the tribe. And sometimes I do feel like an imposter in trying to like even bring back our culture, because it's like I don't have an elder who's teaching me things. I have books, I have videos, you know, I'm using my resources to be able to bring this back. But sometimes I feel like I'm not doing enough. And I think that's a common feeling for Indigenous women, and we're not doing enough. There's always more to be done. So I think that it has its challenges, even in having our voices like respected and honored and valued to the degree that they should be. But I think it's also very empowering to see what women are doing in our communities, like you mentioned. And we have a strong presence about us that I think the drive is there. And especially when a Native woman is motivated, I don't think that there's much that can stop her. So I think that's something that I hope that my child has. Her name is Arlo. I hope that she feels empowered to express herself, even when it might not be a favorable opinion.
I know so many, and you and I know some of the same people that are really strong. They're really strong, and they're strong in the best way possible. They're strong and they're determined. And I'm like you. People do not look at me and go, "Oh, you're Native American." And I don't know what your blood quorum is. I'm a 16th. So my mother was fairly pale. You could tell in the eyes. My grandmother, though, you could really see it. You could see that, you know, you could see that Peoria blood. We have the blood. You can't always see it.
Yes.
So it's interesting that you would say that. I know that my mom made great dumplings. That was her kind of recipe that she always did, that she kind of passed down that tradition. Do you have any recipes or any like traditions or anything that you have gotten from your elders?
I don't think necessarily like a recipe, but fishing has always been a part of our family's life. Like they always enjoyed. I can remember doing that from the time we were really little, just being in the water, fishing. Like that was always something that connected us that we did together. And now I'm understanding like that's a traditional thing. You know, I think there's so many things that people do that they don't understand are tradition. And I'm sure I have some of those things too, that I just don't recognize because it's just normal for me. But yeah, I would say fishing is probably the closest thing that has been a consistent.
Yeah. It is about nature. And as we're getting ready to kind of wrap up and close up, when you look back and when you do look at those videos and read and you see, because you're not just Modoc, you're also, what other tribes are you?
Quapaw and Ottawa.
So have you explored any, and are you exploring all of the history of all of the tribes? Because most people may not realize that most Native Americans are a mix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I know just a little bit about Quapaw and Ottawa. I've put most of my research into Modoc because not only have I been over the Healing House, I've also dabbled in the culture department and started like newsletter and basket weaving classes and language classes and those types of things. So I've really had to kind of dive into Modoc, but yes, absolutely. Like, want to know all of me, you know, I feel like that's so healing and just learning about your history and the struggles and challenges and strengths of your people.
So tell people how they can find information on the Healing House if they just want to look it up.
Yeah, you can visit our website. It's www.modochealinghouse.com. And we're also on Facebook.
Awesome. My guest today has been Jessica Mullen, who's a member of the Modoc tribe. And she has been talking about the Healing House. And Jessica, so great to get to know you. And I know that so many people are going to benefit from what you've had to say. And I just want to say thank you for coming on today.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Wee-hey-ya-ho-ya-ho. Wee-hey-ya-ho.